And tonight we begin a very important, very interesting topic. We're going to be in Romans 14. Does anyone know what the topic is in Romans 14? Yes. What is the topic in Romans 14? Christian liberty. That's right. Christian liberty. So let's write that up here. Christian liberty. What do you think of when you hear Christian liberty? We'll pray in a moment. I just want to get your thoughts going.
Arguments about legalism.
Say that again?
Arguments about legalism, but that's just me.
Okay.
That's me.
Yeah, versus legalism. Right? It's the opposite of that. So, what else? What do you think of when you think Christian liberty? Any thoughts come to mind?
Do's versus don'ts.
Okay, do's versus don'ts.
Love and selfishness.
Okay, love and selfishness, or selflessness, potentially, right? If it's rightly understood. Any other thoughts come to mind? Just associations that you have with Christian liberty? No? All right, good. I often think of Christians judging one another, because I think Christians tend to judge one another most often when it comes to Christian liberty. So we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about areas in which Christians differ in their views of things, and things for which Christians tend to judge one another but shouldn't. And we're going to look at some of the initial instructions. This is the beginning of a fairly long series, because Christian liberty goes through from 14:1 all the way through 15:7 in this book. And it's also in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, and it's in other places. So that's in Galatians chapter 5. So Christian liberty is all over the New Testament. Very important topic for you to understand. There's a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to Christian liberty. One of the greatest ones is that everything is Christian liberty. That's absolutely not true. So we're going to start into this topic tonight. We will only cover verses 1 through 5 if we get that far, but hopefully we'll cover that much. All right, let's begin in prayer. Father God, we thank you so much for this time together. I thank you for each one who's here tonight. We ask that you'd be with us and bless us as we study your word. Help us to put aside all other cares and concerns of the day, all other worries, and just focus our attention on your word and what you're telling us here in Romans 14. I thank you for the privilege of teaching it. I pray that you would use me, help me to be a good teacher for your word in Christ's name. Amen. All right, Romans 14, I want you to look at verse 1. And let's see, Brother Brian, would you read Romans 14:1?
Receive one who is weak in the faith, but not to disputes over doubtful things.
And Miss Veronica, would you read 15:7? Okay, so 14:1 tells us to receive, and 15:7 says to receive. It's the same word in both places, and those are the bookends of this topic. This topic in Romans goes from 14:1 to 15:7, and the topic really is receiving one another, and it really has to do with receiving one another with regard to our differences, not rejecting one another, but and really it's the idea of not just putting up with someone who's different than you, but receiving them like a brother, a sister in Christ, receiving them into your home, into your family, you know, fully, wholeheartedly receiving them, even though they may have very different views than you have. So this is about receiving one another, but it's about Christian liberty. I want to begin by asking you to think about things for which Christians judge one another, and probably the simplest way to think about that is in terms of things that you have heard or that you might hear. Like, I'll give you an example. I just can't believe they bought that house. I mean, that house had to cost a lot of money. That's just wrong. Or, on the other end of it, I can't believe they bought that house. I mean, don't they know that's not a good neighborhood? Surely they could have afforded to buy something better than that in that neighborhood. That's just not right. So it could be the house you buy. What else? Things for which Christians judge one another. Oh, there you go. I can't believe they're mowing the lawn on Sunday. You drive past, and it's Sunday morning, and you might even be on your way to church, and they're mowing their lawn. And you think, maybe they don't go to your church. Maybe they went Saturday night. But you're like, I can't believe they're mowing their grass on Sunday morning, or washing their car, or waxing it. I mean, that's really wrong. What else? Things for which Christians judge one another. Absolutely. Did you see Susie Q's dress? Did you see his Hawaiian shirt? Those shorts he wore to church? Or even just out in public? Right?
Yeah.
Did you like the fireman pajamas he had on at Walmart? And he's the pastor. So clothes. What else?
Their children.
What about their children?
Behavior
of their children. How about how many they have? I can't believe they've got, what do they have, like 9? No, I think it's 14. I think they got 14. Johnny Dasher. 14 kids, right? I heard they're adopting again. They got 14 kids. That can't be right. Or they've only got 2 children. I thought the Bible said to multiply. That's not multiplying. That's adding 2. To multiply, if there's 2 of you, you have to have 4. I don't know. What else? I mean, this is a huge topic.
Music.
Music, right? Music, clothing, things you do on a Sunday, things you do on a Saturday, hobbies. Right? I can't believe he rides a dirt bike. That's heathen. Heathens ride dirt bikes. I can't believe he rides a street bike. Or I can't believe those people go camping. That's dangerous. Camping is dangerous. Fishing is dangerous.
Can't believe they have tattoos.
Tattoos, that's a big one. Trick-or-treating. You're not going to take your kids trick-or-treating, are you? Well, we were going to hand out tracts and get some treats. Well, that's not Christian. Celebrating Christmas. Some people have a hard time with celebrating Christmas. All right. All of these things are things for which Christians tend to judge one another. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have discernment. Doesn't mean maybe we shouldn't have a say or an influence. I can't believe they send their kids to public school. I can't believe they send their kids to private school. I can't believe they homeschool. Yeah, right? So we can easily judge one another for almost anything, and we all differ in our views. I've given you a little handout there of, and this is a very short set of topics, but take a moment, and if you have a pen or pencil, draw a line through things which you think are not permissible for Christians. I'm giving you a list there. Do Christians differ in their views? Which of the following are not permissible? In other words, cross it out, because you would say, that is wrong. That is not permissible for a Christian. And for those who are listening, I'll read off the list. So yes, yeah, so you want to be thinking, that's wrong. Right? Okay, so would you say to watch movies? Like, that's wrong for a Christian to watch movies. Or to watch G-rated, or PG, or PG-13, or R, or X, or on a Sunday. Or to watch television. How many of you ever heard of Christians saying that to watch television is wrong? To own a television. We had someone, when we first became Christians, a man stood up in the church and said it's wrong for Christians to have a television, and he made a call, an appeal to everyone in the church to get rid of their televisions if they had one. So, I mean, we were brand new Christians, and we're like, wow, we didn't know that it's ungodly to have a TV. To watch the news, to watch sports, to watch soap operas, to watch The Simpsons, to watch boxing, MMA. Maybe we could, by the way, you could say to do sports, to do boxing, to do MMA. To play video games. What about M games? And there are probably other ratings, I don't know. To do that for hours. To play poker. What about playing poker for money? What about the lottery or dancing? What about listening to Christian rock or country music? Surely that's wrong. Classic rock, acid rock, rap. To work on Sundays, fish on Sundays, shop on Sundays, eat out on Sundays. To skip church for no good reason. To skip Sunday school for no good reason. To skip Tuesday night Bible study for no good reason. To drink wine, drink beer, smoke cigarettes, smoke e-cigarettes, smoke a cigar, smoke a pipe, marijuana, medical marijuana, chew tobacco, snuff, wear jeans to church, wear shorts to church, or just wear shorts in general, wear makeup, whether to church or in general, wear jewelry, get a tattoo, trick or treat, wear a mask. I added that line for COVID-19. What about to wear a mask? What about to refuse to wear a mask? That's just not Christian to refuse to wear a mask. By the way, did anyone have zero crossouts? Like you didn't cross anything out?
I haven't.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah.
There's lines. I mean, there's okay.
All right.
No,
there's one for sure that every Christian would have to cross out. Does anyone know what that is?
The X-rated movies.
Yes, and why is that?
Because lewdness and lust and inappropriateness and devotedness to your marriage.
You have to say, does the Bible give a command concerning that? And it does, right?
Yeah.
Flee sexual immorality.
Yeah.
So that you have to cross that out. And if somebody said, oh, hey, I got Christian liberty, you'd say, no, you don't. You are commanded by Jesus Christ to flee. That means run hard and fast the opposite direction away from sexual immorality. And an X movie is sexual immorality. So that every Christian should cross off. I've had numerous times, gatherings, where I've taught on this, and someone said, no, that's in the area of Christian liberty. It is not. So let's talk about what is in the area of Christian liberty. What's in the area of Christian liberty is things which God has not expressly forbidden, or things which God has not expressly commanded. So if God has given a command that forbids a thing, well, then that's not Christian liberty. You know, well, that's Christian liberty whether you pay your taxes. No, that's not Christian liberty. You can't exercise your Christian liberty and not pay taxes. So, but there are many other areas than this, as we discussed. How many kids, how they train their kids, whether they spank their kids or don't spank their kids, how they spank their kids. Now, there was a guy at a church that we used to attend who came up with what he felt was the most biblical way to raise your children, and he wrote a book on it. And it was very regimented. It had to do with when the kids need to have naps and how many hours a night sleep and when they should go to bed and when they should get up and schooling and a spanking regimen and even a spanking tool, which he designed and built and sold. But it did get to the point where he was, as I understand it, judging anyone who didn't follow his program because he felt his program was so biblical. And there were people saying, we're not going to use your spanking tool, or we're not going to use your sleep program or your nap program. And he just felt that that was wrong because he'd spent a lot of time coming up with what he felt was the most biblical approach. All right. So let's begin with this truth. Christians have differing convictions. And let's look at 14:1-5. Receive one who is weak in the faith, but not to disputes over doubtful things. Does anyone have a different translation than doubtful things?
Opinions.
What is it?
Opinions.
It could say questionable things, disputed things.
Doubtful
issues. Okay, doubtful issues. Good. So receive one who's weak in the faith, but don't receive that person so that you can argue with them about an issue that is controversial, questionable, in dispute, in the area of opinion, etc. Explanation, verse 2. For one believes that he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats only vegetables. Let not him who eats despise him who does not eat, and let not him who does not eat judge him who eats. Why not? Because God has received him. Who are you to judge another's servant? To his own master he stands or falls. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand. One person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. All right, so we have differing convictions. Even in this room, I am highly confident that we have differing convictions as regards child raising, as regards maybe hobbies, as regards how many chapters of the Bible you should read a day, or how much you should pray each day, or what you can do on a Sunday or shouldn't do on a Sunday, etc. We have differing convictions. And generally, I mean, whatever yours are, don't you think your convictions are good? Sure. If you didn't think your convictions were good, you would change them. So you think your convictions are good, and guess what? The person to your left and the person to your right, he or she also thinks that their convictions are good. But they might not be the same. So generally what happens is we have convictions, we think ours are good and right, we kind of think that others ought to see things the way that we see them, and so we generally try to convince them. Hey, you know, I heard you guys are going trick-or-treating. Yeah, we're looking forward to going trick-or-treating. You know, let me give you something to read here. Well, what is it? Well, that's the background of Halloween. Well, why are you giving me that? Well, I think if you read this, you would see it the way I do. Well, how do you see it? Well, trick-or-treating, that's wrong. That's ungodly. It is? Well, we've been trick-or-treating for years. We love handing out tracts. Oh, you hand out tracts when you trick-or-treat. Maybe. What's that? That fixes everything. Maybe. Maybe not. All right? So we have run into, over the years, a number of situations where, oh, by the way, it might be what is okay for children of the pastor to do or not okay for children of the, I mean, after all, Rick, your kid was doing this and you're the pastor. And? Well, that might be okay for somebody else, but it's not right for the pastor's kids. We had a specific case where someone called us on New Year's Day, they called us. Yeah, New Year's Day, I think it was. Yeah. Someone called us on New Year's Day, correct? Yeah, New Year's Day. Called us on New Year's Day. Hey, so Happy New Year, they said to us. Could we get together with you guys? Yeah. Soon? Sure. How soon did you want to get together? Well, today would be good. All right. Let's get, and I'm all thinking something's up. And the kids had been at a New Year's Eve gathering the night before. So long story short, these folks saw something that our kids were doing and felt that that is wrong and certainly wrong for pastor's children. So we had to work through that. And it, by the grace of God, that all came out well. Came out well. We came to Romans 14. We talked about convictions and differing convictions. And it came out very good. We remained friends and so forth. But that can happen, that somebody sees behavior, your behavior, the behavior of your kids, your wife's, whoever it is, and they're thinking this is wrong. Because for them, they would never do that, or they'd never let their children do that. So the question is, how can we all get along? How can we worship together, serve together, love one another, welcome one another into our homes when, you know, you're a Democrat and I'm a Republican? Or you're an independent. I can't believe you voted for her or him. How can we get along and truly love one another without putting on a mask? We don't want to be hypocrites, right? Love, be without hypocrisy. We don't want to go, hey, it's great to see you. Oh, I can't stand being with this person because they have different views than I have. How do we do that? And the only way to do it is by following the wisdom of Christ in these chapters. That's how you do it. You listen to what Christ says. You try to understand his argument. And then you seek to obey his commands. And there are a number of them here. And all of this is part of presenting your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable act of worship, and not being conformed to this world, but being transformed by the renewing of your mind. All that's written here in the section on Christian liberty is to transform your thinking so that you realize it's okay for a brother or sister in Christ to have different convictions than what you have, and for you to accept them fully and not keep them at arm's length, because after all, they have different convictions than you. That's very hard to do. It really is. Because inside, you feel like that's wrong, that like, you know you don't approve of what this person does. Now, if it's sin, that's different. But if it's in the area of Christian liberty, then you're supposed to receive them. So, let's walk through this. Verse 1. Receive one who is weak in the faith, but not to disputes over doubtful things. Now, the connection to the immediately previous section is that this is part of loving others, and this is part of living in light of the times. The previous section talked largely about loving one another and living in light of the times, which is our salvation is drawing near. This is a time for us to be loving one another for the sake of the gospel. So this is part of that. Now, it says receive one. What does it mean to receive? And I got into that a bit already. How many of you are in the hermeneutics Monday night? Any of you in the hermeneutics thing Monday night? Okay. This is a hermeneutical principle, which we haven't gone over and probably won't. But generally speaking, when you have a section that introduces a new topic. And in that section, there are lots of exhortations. Usually the first one is the most general. So receive here is the general exhortation. And if you want to understand it, what you do is you look at all the ones that follow. So for example, it starts out with receive, and this section ends with receive. But in between there is don't despise, let him come to his own conviction, don't judge, bear up with. So all of those are the idea of receiving. Receive without judging. Receive, you know, warmly. Receive as in bearing with this person. Receive so that you hold nothing against them. And it is the word for receiving someone as a family member. Receive as a brother or sister. And then it says, receive one who is weak in the faith. Now, who is the one who is weak in the faith? Take a look at verse 1 and 2. And who is the one who is weak in the faith?
A new Christian?
Okay. So where do you get that?
No, I don't know.
So take a look at verses 1 and 2 and see if you can explain, describe, help us understand.
The Christian
being
as the rule.
Okay. Oh, in this case, which rule?
The rule they think that we ought to follow.
So take a look at, so it says, for one believes he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats only vegetables. Now in this case, the weak one is the one who is on a restricted diet. Now, here we have to think about, well, what's going on here? He who is weak eats only vegetables. Is this first century vegetarianism, vegan? What's anybody know what's going on there? Maybe you have a footnote in a study Bible, or maybe you've read or studied this before. The issue at that time in this group was what you eat. And one thinks he can eat anything. But another, the weak one, has a rule and thinks only vegetables. Anyone know where that's coming from?
Kind of like the law.
Okay.
You can't eat, like, back in the Old Testament, where you can't eat, like, certain hoods or not hoods.
Okay. Right. So it probably is, part of this is probably coming from what they understand the law to say. Anyone know where else this is coming from? Yes. In the first century, if you wanted to go get some meat, generally you went to the meat market, and Russia had that too. There was a market in town, and it was the meat market. And you would go there. And in the first century, the best meat that you could get was the meat that they had already offered to idols. In fact, it was like, that's a selling feature. Hey, you know, you want to buy these meats because this is the good stuff, and it's already been sacrificed to the idols, so now it's protected. You know, it's been sacrificed to the gods, and so this is the good stuff. Well, that's what you've already always been buying. Mom's always bought this good stuff here. Now you become a Christian, and you're like, that can't be right for me to eat that meat. That was offered to idols. That's false religion. That's paganism. I can't eat that. So it could be coming from the culture, the fact that these meats have been offered to idols, and it could be coming partly from the law. But Jason is correct in that, so the one has this rule that it's not right for me to eat these meats. By the way, one believes he may eat all things. Based on? Where would somebody believe that they could eat whatever?
Verse 14?
Let's look down there. I know and I am convinced by the Lord Jesus there is nothing unclean of itself. Okay, good. So Paul says that. Where does Paul get that? Okay. So in the book of Acts, remember, Peter saw a sheet come down out of heaven and said, I've never eaten anything unclean. And God says, well, what I've declared clean, don't say it's unclean. Is there another place? All right, that was a good 20. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. All things indeed are pure, but it's evil for the man who eats with offense.
Jesus.
Yeah, what did Jesus say?
He said it's not what enters into the body that makes you sinful.
Yeah. You can bet, let's turn for a moment to Mark chapter 7. You can bet when Jesus said these words, it was revolutionary. Mark chapter 7, and there are parallel passages in at least Matthew and maybe Luke, but I like Mark's rendering of this. Jesus said something in public. He entered the house, and now the disciples are like, wait a second, what? So let's look at 7:14, Mark 7:14. When Jesus had called all the multitude to himself, he said to them, hear me, everyone, and understand. Like, listen to this. There is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him. Wait, what? Doesn't that sound wrong based on the law? What do you mean there's nothing that can enter you that defiles you? Because the Pharisees had a whole list of things that could enter you and defile you. And therefore, you would never let those things enter your body. He says there is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him. But the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile a man. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. Verse 17, when he had entered a house away from the crowd, his disciples asked him concerning the parable, like, what does this mean? What are you saying? He said to them, verse 18, Mark 7:18, are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him? Why not? Because it doesn't enter his heart, but his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods. That's probably a parenthetical insert by Mark. Thus purifying all foods. Jesus, by these statements, purified all foods. And Jesus said, what comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of man, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, and evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile a man. So that's what makes you unacceptable to God, not what goes in. So now we go back to Romans 14, and Paul says, okay, you have someone who for some reason, maybe based on some things they heard from the law, maybe based on meats being sacrificed to idols, but for whatever reason, you have somebody who thinks they can eat only vegetables. They can't eat meats. Paul is saying that's the weaker person here. Why is he saying that that's the weaker person? Why would he call this person weak? Okay. What is he weak in? Is he weak in faith? I mean, he believes 100% that he's doing right by eating only vegetables, that this is pleasing to God to have this diet. And probably thinks that the person who is not eating only vegetables is not pleasing to God. And that's what they believe. So maybe they're strong in that faith. What are they weak in? Okay, and to be specific, you're on the right track. To be even more specific, yeah, weaken their understanding of New Testament teaching, weaken their understanding of what Christ taught, weaken their understanding probably of the gospel, and yes, of the liberty that we now have in Christ. Maybe weaken their understanding of what change took place when Christ died on the cross, and he set us free from the law, right? Because Romans 7 said that we died to the law in Christ so that we might be married to another, that is Jesus. So now we look to Jesus, and Jesus taught in Mark 7 and other places and through Peter that we're not under the Mosaic law. We're not under that food law anymore. And you can feel free to eat whatever because that in itself doesn't commend you to God and it doesn't defile you before God. So, the weak here, and here's a commentator's rendering, the weak were probably primarily Jewish Christians who refrained from eating certain foods and observed certain days out of a continuing loyalty to the Mosaic law. And so Paul addresses the strong first. Notice, receive one who is weak, that's to the strong. So the one who has the burden here is those who are strong, stronger in their understanding of the gospel, stronger in their understanding of Christian liberty. And the strong in their understanding of the gospel are commanded to receive, welcome the one who is weak, the one who has the rule, the one who has the restriction based on whatever, but not to disputes over doubtful things. So let's talk about that. It probably means not receiving them so as to quarrel over opinions, or don't receive them for the purpose of passing judgment over their issues. Like, oh, hey, come on in. We know we were just talking about this ridiculous view that you hold that you can only eat vegetables, and come on in because we want to fix you. No, you're not receiving them for the purpose of trying to fix them. You receive them as they are. You let them hold this conviction that they can only eat vegetables. You let them hold this conviction that they can't celebrate Christmas, that they can't go trick-or-treating. You let them hold this conviction that they can go trick-or-treating or whatever. Okay? You let them hold their conviction, and you receive them with the convictions that they have. You're not receiving them so that you can change their convictions so that you'll like them. You're receiving them as they are, is the idea. Why state it negatively? In other words, receive them, but not to disputes over doubtful things. What does that imply?
Agree to disagree.
Okay. It implies that that's what was happening. Right? When it says, but not to disputes over doubtful things the way that you're doing, don't receive them just so as to try to fix them and get them to think the way you think. No, receive them the way they are now, with the convictions that they already hold. Even if you don't agree with them, even if you think that's crazy or that's ridiculous or whatever. Let's see. Cambridge says, receive him without criticism. Let him in with a welcome, not with a call to debate. The strong do not need to decide the issue for the weak in order for there to be unity. So it's like saying, you who are strong in your understanding of the gospel and its implications for Christian liberty must fully receive, like a beloved brother or sister, the one who is not as strong as you are in the faith, without any criticizing of the weak person's doubts or their convictions. So think of somebody who has a rule, all right, that you would say, you know, that's really not a biblical rule, but they have a rule. Well, you receive them and you don't try to fix them for their thinking about the rule. That's not easy to do. Because we, again, we generally think that our view of things is correct. So let's say that, I don't know, help me out, pick one. Where you think Christians probably have this rule, but you know that the gospel doesn't have that rule. Going to church? Okay. Well, going to church is not really in the area of Christian liberty because we are commanded to assemble together. So it could be, though, what they wear to church. Right? Let's say that someone... well, let's say that somebody has... What would be a rule that maybe someone has when it comes to... Okay. Okay. All right. So you receive her into your home, your friend into your home, without any reservations. And you don't try to, you know, put out meat that your friend doesn't like or want or that thinks is wrong out on the table. That's what you do. All right? Again, we talked about all these differences that we have. So what if somebody has a rule that it's wrong to it's wrong to send kids to public school? That's just not Christian. My goodness, their heads are going to be filled up with the world's philosophy. That's wrong to send your kids to public. That's not Christian. Okay, well, the gospel doesn't say that. And so you realize you can send your kids to public school. You can homeschool them. You can send them to private school. You could hire a tutor. There might be a wide number of reasons for why you'd send your kids to public school. Right? Maybe you can't homeschool. Maybe you see some bad side of homeschooling and so forth. All right, well, you need to receive the one whose convictions are totally different than yours without any reservations, without thinking behind the scenes, oh, I'm having a hard time with this because I know they think that public school's wrong. Thoughts, questions?
More about the fish and the meat issue, and being coming from a Catholic background, I know that can come from Catholic doctrine.
Right.
So that's kind of a different, I mean, not that you shouldn't, you know, receive them into your home, but it could be an issue of not understanding the gospel. Which
right.
There may not be a fellow.
Right. And the context here is definitely professing Christians. And really, this is to us. This is to people within the church family, and we are to receive one another despite our differing convictions, right? So let's say that someone has a rule. Yeah, I don't want to get, you know, like personal or anything. I don't want to pick on anybody here if I think they have a different rule.
I know one that I have that not many do.
Okay, what is it?
Fascinations?
Oh, vaccinations. Okay, yeah. Let's say vaccinations. And so what, share your conviction because it's okay.
I don't vaccinate. I haven't vaccinated my kids since my middle child was 2.
Right. So let's say that I'm a doctor or a medical professional, right? And I'm publishing things out there about vaccinations, and I'm, you know, maybe I work for the vaccination board or something, I don't know. And I'm all for vaccinations. If I'm a Christian, guess what? I need to receive you without any reservations, even if I know the way you view it. Based on this, I am prohibited by the gospel, by Christ, I'm prohibited from looking down on you and thinking, that's just, she doesn't vaccinate. We can't have them over to dinner. Their kids haven't got the shots, right? Their kids don't have their shots, right? Christians are, that's a good example. Christians are prohibited from creating a barrier between them and other Christians, even if it's something they're passionate about, right? This is hard teaching. Right.
Right.
Yeah. We just had a baby and we're at your house. We're like, well, really, tomorrow we got to get up early. We got to get all the vaccinations done. And you go, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Why not? Those vaccinations, they cause cancer and diabetes and autism. And I know this one person, they had a shot and their kid was instantly autistic or whatever. Right. And we go, what? Have you not read the science on this? I mean, vaccinations, they're great. They're, man, what, your kids don't have? We can't do that as Christians, right? You're free to share literature. You're free to, it's not that you can't talk about these things, but as soon as you are not receiving one another, welcoming one another, loving one another, as soon as you cross over into judging one another, that's disallowed, right? This is the law concerning Christian liberty. I want you to notice the formula in the next verse. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll take a little break and then we're going to look at the formula in the next verse, all right? Okay, I want you to note verse 3 now. Take a look at verse 3. And there's a formula here that is useful for every issue of Christian liberty. I mean, everyone. It says, let not him who eats despise him who does not eat. And let not him who does not eat judge him who eats. Now there's the formula. In their case, the issue was eating. Eating meats or not eating meats. And this instruction is to both sides. Let not him who eats whatever it is that he or she wants to eat. So this is the person who feels they have Christian liberty, right? So you could say this is the
mature person, right? Or the strong.
This person is not allowed to despise. Anybody have a different translation for despise?
Regard with contempt.
It is the idea of looking down on someone else. You know. So here, the strong, the one who feels they have freedom and does have freedom, right? Let on him who eats meats because they feel that they have an understanding of the gospel allows for that. You're not allowed to look down or despise or treat with contempt the one who does not blank, in this case, eat meat. On the other hand, let not him who does not, this is the one that eats only vegetables, doesn't eat meat, that person is not allowed to judge the person who does. But notice, let's talk vaccinations. And the one person says, well, I know that I have the liberty to choose whether I vaccinate or not. And somebody else feels that, well, to not vaccinate, I mean, that's, they feel like there's a rule, right? You have to vaccinate or you have to not. So the weaker is the one with a rule that is not gospel-based, okay? The weaker one is the one that has a rule that is not rooted in the gospel. So let's say that the person who decides, has the freedom to vaccinate, that person can't look down on the one who does not have that freedom. Let him who does not have the freedom to choose this, let not that person despise him who does. Someone has a rule that you can only homeschool. And really, this one is the one who has the liberty. Let not him who has the liberty to do blank despise the other Christian in the fellowship who doesn't have the liberty to do blank based on
whatever reason, conviction. And let not him who does not have the liberty to do whatever it is judge the other person. And so here's what, there's also something else to learn here. The person who feels they have a good, solid understanding of the gospel and therefore the freedom to do certain things, their tendency is to look down on the person who has the restriction as like, oh my goodness, guy thinks he can't eat meats. All caught up in some, I guess it's based on some tradition. They feel like they can't observe Christmas. They feel like they can't wear jeans to church. Oh, how sad, they're locked into their old tradition. And they tend to look down on them as they're lower, they're lesser, they're weaker, they're newer, they're whatever. On the other hand, the person who has their conviction based on tradition or knowledge of the law or the way they were brought up or whatever, they tend to judge the other person based on their law or their conviction. I can't believe that they take their kids trick-or-treating. Well, that's just ungodliness. They wear jeans to church. She wore jeans, a woman. The Bible says you're not a woman's not to wear a man's clothing. Or whatever. So what is this? This is a law, right? You don't have the freedom to despise, and you don't have the freedom to judge. What Christ is saying is there's something that you don't have the liberty to do here, and that's despise or judge your fellow Christian when you have differing convictions in the area of Christian liberty. Now, when it comes to, as we said on our list there, when it comes to dirty movies, that's not a Christian liberty issue. And so part of the issue here is to discern what is in the area of Christian liberty and what is not in the area of Christian liberty. Give me an example of something that is not in the area of Christian liberty.
Well, even R-rated movies could be.
Correct, correct. An R-rated movie that is filthy, that is sexually immoral, that's not in the area of Christian liberty. You're supposed to be fleeing that kind of thing. What else? Something that is not an issue of Christian liberty.
Being a drunkard.
Okay, very good. Hey, I got the liberty. God doesn't say how many drinks I can have. No, but he does say, don't be drunk. And he says, don't be drunk with wine. And he tells us that drunkards won't inherit the kingdom of heaven. Right? So you don't have the freedom to sin. You don't have the liberty to do things that God prohibits. Also, you do not have the liberty to ignore another person's convictions. We had a fellow seminary student, friends of ours in seminary, and they moved to Tennessee. He had been a doctor before seminary, so he had lots of money. He came to seminary, and when he left seminary, he went to pastor a church in Tennessee, and he had money from his doctoring days, and as we understand it, he bought a very large house in a very nice neighborhood, and he already drove a BMW from back in his doctor days. And he went to pastor a small church in Tennessee. Well, now you got people at church who don't drive BMWs and wouldn't even think to, and don't live in big houses, and their pastor comes and buys, you know, it'd be like maybe somebody came here and they bought, I don't know, is there the fanciest place in town? Okay. They buy this $500,000 home or whatever they cost out there, home in Pueblo West, and they drive what's a really high-end car, Mercedes something or other, and that's the pastor. What's that?
A Viper,
okay, and that's the pastor of this church, and you're like, I'm putting money in the plate. That guy's got a nicer house than I'll ever have, drives a nicer car than I'll ever drive. So does a Christian have the liberty to live in a nice house? Yeah.
Yeah.
Does a Christian have the liberty to drive a nice car?
Yes.
But did our friend make a mistake?
Yeah.
What's the mistake?
It's just not wise to live so far above people that you're trying to minister to.
Yeah. He didn't think about how this might be perceived by other people in his congregation. He needed to be willing to put aside his desire, even if it made financial sense for him, to buy a big fancy house, you know, capital gains, reinvesting, and so forth. Even if it made financial sense for him to do what he did, and even if the BMW is, you know, from years ago, even if he could give an explanation and say, but I have Christian liberty, he doesn't have the liberty to be unloving towards others. And part of love is to take into consideration the way they would see this, the way they'd feel about it.
But the pastor has higher
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a specific issue where it's because he's a pastor, not necessarily, does that make sense?
Yeah. He needs to be a spiritual leader here and set an example for others, and is, you know, is this setting an example? See if I can find it real quick here. Yeah, in verse 15. Yet if your brother is grieved because of your food, you are no longer walking in love. And there's another formula. If your brother is grieved because of the way you exercise your liberty, if your brother is in any way hurt, offended because of how you use your liberty, now you're not loving. And you don't have the liberty to not love. And love will seek to do no harm to a neighbor. So again, you don't have the liberty to not consider how others might feel. So let's say that, weird example from years gone by, and I'll apply it to myself. Let's say that I've always loved Halloween, and I've always made a big deal about Halloween, and dressed up, and held costume parties. Let's say that I've always done that. And then I became a Christian, and I kept on doing that. But let's say that I'm a pastor, and I say, hey, everybody, my big Halloween party's going to be this year, October 31st, going to have the haunted house. We're going to have the, you know, I just... And I do that as a pastor. Now, do you have the liberty to do Halloween if you want to?
Yes.
Yeah, you do. But kind of what Lauren said, is that wise, loving for a pastor? Especially if he comes into some really conservative area. Is it wise, loving, right for the pastor? Even though he's always made a big deal out of Halloween, to do that in that environment? Absolutely not. So you don't have the liberty to not consider how others might be affected if you exercise your liberty, right? So let's move on. So again, here's the general formula. And is it the next verse? Yeah, let's look at verse 4. Who are you to judge another servant, to his own master he stands or falls. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand. The issue here is that God has already determined that this person is his, because this is a professing Christian. This is a brother or sister in Christ. So now you're not in a position to judge this person negatively, because God already has delivered this person out of judgment. There's no condemnation from God's standpoint. So you're not in a position where you can condemn, because God's not condemning, is the idea there. Notice what it says in verse 5. One person esteems one day above another. Another person esteems every day alike. Now, why would one person esteem one day above another? Yeah, and that makes sense, doesn't it? And all of us have come from different backgrounds. How many of you, growing up, were told that it's wrong to do certain things on Sunday? I did. I grew up, we don't go shopping on Sundays. I can't remember exactly, but that's the Sabbath. That's the day we don't do other things. What else? You know, actually, I grew up with, of course you're going to observe Christmas. I mean, it's probably pretty not Christian to not celebrate Christmas. Well, that's kind of changed. There are quite a few Christians nowadays who think that to celebrate Christmas is wrong. There are even Christians who have written that it's sinful to celebrate Christmas. Now, I think they've overstepped their bounds. But they would even judge people for celebrating Christmas. Don't you know that it's a pagan holiday? Don't you know? And they'll give you the history or a document that tells you the history of Christmas. And they'll go to Jeremiah and talk about going into the woods and cutting down a tree and say, see, that's what you're doing when you get a Christmas tree. Well, Jeremiah isn't talking about getting a Christmas tree, actually. It's talking about going and cutting down a tree and fashioning it into an idol that you set up in your house to worship. But there are people that say, well, that's where Christmas trees came from. It came out of idolatry. And you know, for somebody who never read the background and only grew up in a house where we're celebrating the birth of Jesus, and it was this tradition, you didn't even know what the tradition came from, You know, you might be ingrained in your mind that we're going to celebrate Christmas. And somebody else comes along and says, well, that's wrong for you to do. So one esteems, and it could be read this way in verse 5, one member of the body of Christ, one member of your church, esteems based on what they've been taught, based on what they've learned over the years, based on their religious background. One member of the church esteems one day above another, like a holy day, like a celebration, like whatever. But another person feels like, well, every day is pretty much the same, and I don't think I have to do something really special on one day versus another day, and I don't see it the same way, and I think it's okay if I work on Christmas, even if Christmas falls on a Sunday. How about this? Is it okay for a Christian to go out and get Black Friday deals on Thanksgiving night?
Yes.
But could another Christian go, no? Sure. You could have another Christian go, no, that's wrong. That's Thanksgiving. You can't. Right? Oh, I think you could find it. Yeah, oh yeah, I think so. Like, I can't believe you're going, it's Thanksgiving. And a lot of times when people have a real strong conviction, they're going to give you their biblical basis. And what are they going to go to say it's wrong to go shopping on Thanksgiving evening? Oh, they're going to say that, why are you going shopping? Because of the deals. See, that's greed. You're only doing that to save money, and to save money, that's greed. That's right where they go.
Buy anything on sale.
On the other hand, you could say, I've always wanted to get my husband this one thing that he's always wanted, and for years we've not been able to afford it. And this year, Grandma gave some money, but only on Thanksgiving Eve am I going to be able to afford to buy the. Well, now you're showing love to your husband by going out on Thanksgiving evening to get that great deal or something. You know, maybe. I'm just trying to think of somebody else might have an argument to say that this is a godly thing to do. And this is what happens, that Christians have their convictions about what's right and wrong. We think that our convictions are correct, and we tend to justify them. But if it's not something that's commanded or prohibited in the gospel, you got to be careful. So, let's see. Oh, okay. Entire churches can split over this. And I'm thankful that our church has remained united here in what we're doing under the COVID-19 thing. But in Russia, there is what's called the Registered Baptist Church and the Unregistered Baptist Church. There came a time in Russian Baptist church history where the government said, hey, you need to register with the government that you are an entity. You need to say, yeah, we're New Life Bible Church. Here's our elders. Here's our church constitution. And we want to be by the law. We want to submit to the governing authorities. And there were churches that said, yeah, we're going to do that. And there were others who said, we're not doing that. They've got no right to have us write a constitution or say who our leaders are or let people know what our finances are. That is none of their. We are not going to register. That's oppressive government. We are not going to do it. And the Russian Baptist Church at large split. And now what's really sad and almost comical is you go into a small little community, a village, and there's a church over here, and there's a church over here. And if you went to either one, you'd be like, hey, so you guys really have the same doctrine. What's the difference? Well, we're the unregistered Baptist church. Well, who are those guys? They're the registered Baptist church. Well, do they believe in Jesus Christ? Yeah. You believe in Jesus? Yeah. And you guys go down through the list. Do you believe there's only one God? Do you believe in the Trinity? Do you believe in salvation by grace through faith alone and Christ alone? Yep. Well, how come you got two churches? Well, because 100 years ago, their great-grandfathers decided to register. And 100 years ago, our great-grandfathers decided not to register. Well, do you guys get along? Oh, yeah, we get together and we have cookouts. And my daughter married that pastor's son or, you know, whatever. You're kidding, right? No, they're not kidding. What happened? There was a group that had firm convictions that it would be wrong to register. And there was a group that had firm convictions that it would be wrong not to register. And they split. I guess not, because now, you know, you have unregistered Baptist churches that exist and function and do their church stuff. I have preached in unregistered Baptist churches, and we serve in the registered Baptist church. And so I was able to, as an international, I was able to cross over and be over in, but they don't let each other preach in each other's churches. I was able to go and preach in unregistered churches, but the average Russian guy didn't.
But the registered churches have
even now, you know, we could talk about, okay, to what degree and for how long are we going to be willing to submit to the governing authorities? You know, what if the governing authorities in September say, all right, well, we're just going to continue with, you can never have more than 50 people in your church. Maximum church size is 50 people. And your church has 250 people. And you just say, you know what, we're not going to do that. And then you got some people in the church going, you mean we're going to go against the governing authorities? That's a violation of Romans 13. And they said, well, no, we're going to obey God rather than men, and we're going to, and now you got a church split because you got some of your people think this is right and some think it's wrong. Yeah. So this, it gets difficult because submitting to the governing authorities is not a Christian liberty issue, but would there ever come a point where you would choose not to submit to the governing authorities? Well, yes, if they commanded us to do something that God forbids, or they forbade us to do something God commands. Then we'd say, hey, wait, now here, we can't submit to the governing authorities. But that might be a judgment call on the part of leaders, and maybe not everyone in the church is going to agree. Even now, right, we have people who say, I'm not comfortable gathering, I'm going to stay home and watch Zoom. We say, that's fine. We want to accommodate that, and we're going to put Zoom out there, and you can stay at home and watch Zoom. So, you know, we're trying to, obviously, we're trying to keep everybody together, and people have different convictions about masks and distancing and all that kind of stuff. Difficult. When what?
When do you think it would be breaking God's, like, not law, but, like, commandment to gather?
When they forbade it?
Yeah, if they came out and there's no data, you know, obviously we're in the midst of a pandemic, so they can obviously say, well, we're not singling out churches. You're not the only ones who have restrictions, and they'd be true. That'd be correct. This is not just America. It's all over the world. True statement. Okay, well then, we're not singling you out just because you're Christians. Let's say all the other restrictions go away, but on churches, they still are imposing tight restrictions. Well, now you say, well, you know what? We need to obey God rather than men. You've singled out Christianity and churches, and you're saying we can't gather. There's no basis for this. And so now you've got to figure out, what are we going to do? We've talked about, would we go to home churches? You know, divvy up the congregation and go to home gatherings or something like that. Well, we'd be like the Russians did. We're going to have to go out into the woods and hide the kids in the coats and gather, and because we're not going to cease to worship God. We're not going to cease to make disciples. We're not going to cease doing what God has called us to do. So, all right. Verse 3. I had a comment here I wanted to share with you. This is from Douglas Moo in his commentary. The weak likely considered themselves to be the righteous remnant who alone were still upholding the high standards of the Mosaic law and judging others for not living up to the high standard. So it is in many legalistic churches. They feel they're upholding the high standard. We have a church right across the street here that Sam and Millie attended for a time, and I'm pretty sure, if I understood them correctly, that if you are a woman and you come into that church, you must have a dress on. Yeah, right across the street here. Yeah. So I think your women are required to wear a dress, and probably it's a certain length. Maybe, I don't know if it's ankle length. Baptist, I think, yeah. So they have a set of dress rules. And oftentimes, I don't know if this is their case, but oftentimes in a church that historically has had a dress code, they do see themselves as the ones who are, at least we're holding to the old righteous standard, and the standard is part of their righteousness, which, you know, that was the issue with the Pharisees. The Pharisees had what they believed was their righteous standard, and we're holding to the standard, and if you didn't follow that standard, all of a sudden you're not righteous. So you got to be careful. Our righteousness doesn't come from our standards, whether food or clothing or any of that. Our righteousness is from Christ alone. He is our righteousness. That doesn't mean at the same time that you shouldn't have any clothing standards. Because if we had some lady start dressing in a way that was like very distracting and very difficult for any of us to accept, we're going to have to deal with that. We're not going to go, ah, she's got liberty to wear that. We're in a church in California where gals were coming into the Saturday night or Sunday night service in bikinis, fresh from the beach. They've been at the beach and they come to church service, and we're going, we were coming from Pennsylvania Methodist Church. where if a deacon wasn't wearing a suit, he probably ought to be stripped of being a deacon. And we're in this church going, what? Welcome to Southern California. Yeah, it was just a shock. We only went a couple times, and I mean, we weren't Christians, but we went a couple times, and we're like, preaching was good. The rock band was, you know, White Fang or something. Christian rock. Striper. I don't know, some hard rock, Christian rock band. And that was just a shock to us, too. All right, moving along. So, verse 5. One person esteems one day above another, another seems every day alike, and here's the key. I think it's the key to really all of this section, the key to Christian liberty. It's one of my most favorite verses, or half verses. This is a very common go-to for counseling. Christians a lot of time have questions about God's will. You know, what's God's will in this case? Choice of college. Do you have liberty in your choice of college? Yep. Do you have liberty in whether you go to college? Yep. Can a Christian serve in the military? Are there Christians who believe that you can't serve in the military? Yeah. And they're convinced they're right. So this is a huge issue, and here it is. Let, this is 14:5b, let each be fully convinced in his own mind. Now notice the way that it's worded. Let. In other words, if I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I want to obey this command, and I do, then I am being commanded by Jesus that I have to let you do something. What do I have to let you do? I have to let you come to your own conviction on the issue of schooling, clothing, eating, what you do on Sunday, et cetera, et cetera. I am commanded by Jesus to let you come to your own conviction. That means I can't judge you. I can't look down upon you. I can't make you see it the way that I see it. I can have fair discussion, reasonable discussion. Hey, you know, you might want to rethink that. I said to someone right here in this very room, all I said was our conviction, but they felt like I was telling them that this is what they should do. I said, one of the things that we did with our kids is we said, your schooling isn't done until you finish college. That's what we do with our kids. And the person said, you don't have to send your kids to college. I said, I totally agree. You don't have to send your kids to college. I'm simply telling you what we did. What we did with ours is we told them, you're not done with school until you're done with college. And when you're done with college, and if you don't want to go any beyond college, that's fine. That's what we did as parents. That's how we parented. So we, early on, we told them, you're not done at 12th grade. You're done when you finish college. That's the way it's going to be. Well, we aren't telling anyone else they have to do that. And I don't hold that conviction. If Pastor Rick were to say, well, what do you think if Justice was to join the military? Great. Well, but you said your kids had to go to college. Yep. Well, don't you think every parent has to tell their kid that? No. I don't have that conviction. I just would say, well, here's what we did. Here's why we did that. But that doesn't mean that anyone else has to hold that conviction. Right? Does that make sense? So, let each one. Now, what's implied by let each one be fully convinced? What does that imply?
Leave them alone.
Okay. Leave them alone. But what's the burden on you? No, I have to let you, but what do you have to do?
You have to be handled, have no doubt.
Right, you have to become convinced. Right, also when it says let each one, I have to let you become fully convinced, but I also have to work on becoming convinced myself. In other words, it's a call to develop convictions. Take a look at, let's see, verse 22. Do you have faith? That means, do you have a conviction? Well, have it to yourself before God. Happy is he who does not condemn himself in what he approves. But he who doubts is condemned if he eats, because he doesn't eat from faith, for whatever is not from faith or conviction is sin. As a Christian, you have an obligation to come to a conviction about something before you do it. Let's say, for example, here's one that's near and dear to both Pastor Rick and Brenda's heart and our heart, your child joining the military. And let's say that I'm like, I don't know, should I allow my child to join the military? My goodness, he's only 18. There's a lot of bad influences in the military. Amen. a lot of bad influences in the military. He could end up going overseas. He could end up carrying a gun. He could end up being shot at, or she, right? Should I let my daughter join the military? Well, what is this saying? Let each one be fully convinced in his own mind. You need to come to a conviction on that before you decide it. You don't want to be saying, I guess. You don't want to be doing that. You want to be saying, you know, I've really thought about this. I've really prayed about this. I've talked to a lot of people about this. I've come to the conviction that it's okay to let my son or daughter join the military. Or somebody else says, you know what, I've done a lot of thinking about this. We've really prayed about it. We've come to the conviction that we are not going to allow our daughter to join the military. Jake's wife, I'm not positive about this, but I think that she had thought about joining the military.
She wanted to go to the Naval Academy.
Wanted to go to the Naval Academy, and I think her parents were like, you know, we did not think that would be the best thing. I'm pretty sure that's correct. Even if it's not in their case, there are plenty of cases where parents have come to the conviction that it would not be right for their daughter, for example, to join the military. And they say, daughter, we love you, we care about you, we know you want to go off and join the military, but I'm sorry, we're still your parents, you're still living in our house, and no, you may not join the military. Okay. Another father in the church might have a daughter who joined the military, and it's worked out great. And that father does not have a right to judge and say, what are you doing forbidding your daughter to join the military? That's ridiculous. Look, Susie joined, and look, now she's commanding the ship. Hey, that's your experience. So you have to let other Christians come to their own convictions. But also, you need to come to your own convictions on issues before you decide them. Because if you do it not by faith, not by conviction, if you do it with doubting, end of verse 23. Whatever is not from faith, that means you're doing this on your conviction, now it's a sin. Ooh. Really? Yeah. Now it's a sin. Is it okay for a Christian to move his family to Russia when the children are little? For missions? Well, you shouldn't do that. That's a foreign culture. I mean, do you even know Russian? No. Do you know any Russians? No. Well, that's irresponsible. You're going to move your kids over there, and my goodness, that Russian people, do you know what those people are like? No. Or, if you're already a missionary in Russia, and you own real estate there, you own an apartment, you already live there, you're fluent in the language, you're serving, you're ministering, can you move out of Russia? You can't move out of Russia. You're already fluent in the language. You're already here. You own an apartment. You're ministering. You're having an influence. You can't leave. Well, I got 20 reasons to leave, and I'll tell you what they are. And you're telling me I don't have freedom? Let each one become fully convinced. You have to let me come to my conviction on that. It's not your decision. And I have to let you come to your conviction to stay or to not stay. This is the way that we can get along with one another and love each other and serve one another, even though we have very different convictions. Does that make sense? Thoughts, questions, comments?
Time's about up.
Illustrations, examples, stories from the front lines. What's that?
I remember going to California last year.
And? Differing convictions?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.